The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 27, A Taste of Things to Come. "You've seen any action before?" grunted Boris over to his new companion. Dan Carpazzo kept his gaze fixed straight ahead. Over the top of his trench he had a clear view of the barren red rock, sloping gently down to the plain. In the distance rose the massive black storm clouds, but closer to them a thin red mist rolled lazily towards their positions. It was barely half a mile away now.
"I've seen action," he grunted matter-of-factly. A slight tremor to his words was the only giveaway.
He stared anxiously at the unfamiliar landscape. The bank of mist ahead had a ghostly quality, and seemed to give off a faint illumination.
"I'm in experience out here, in the field," pushed Boris in his deep, gruff voice.
"I saw a little fighting around our EP," muttered Carpazzo.
He double-checked his bulky rifle again, mechanically running through the routine.
"Shoot anyone?" asked Boris,
laying his own gun on the side of the trench and straightening up, stretching his arms in fatigue.
"What?"
snapped Carpazzo defensively, turning to appraise the unfamiliar man. Boris, as he had recently introduced himself in his gruff, monosyllabic tone, was a giant of a man, well over 6 feet tall and heavily built. His armoured suit was battered and dented, covered in battle scars and a thick crust of red oxide.
"I said, did you shoot anyone?"
he boomed again, his face hidden behind his menacing mask and visor. He bent down and picked up a large rock from the bottom of their trench, idly tossing it onto the top of the low wall to increase his cover.
"No,"
grunted Dan, turning his attention back to the plane.
"Good,"
muttered Boris, as he positioned the boulder next to his shooting point.
"A lot of my friends died to defend the field against you people. I wouldn't want to have to bear a grudge."
Carpazzo shot him a nervous glance. He could feel the big man grinning at him behind his face mask. Dan was thankful that his own timid features were also hidden behind his visor.
"Keep the noise down, you two,"
snapped their commanding officer from where he crouched a few yards away along the trench. Carpazzo surveyed their positions once again. Palmer's Point, as the British had named it, was now fortified with around 60 soldiers, mainly Americans, but with a few experienced members of Ladich's forces. They were all well dug in, and were now simply awaiting the onslaught. He glanced anxiously back to the large bluff of rock which rose up in high cliffs where the main force was preparing to defend the British entry point. Although only 100 yards distant, the safety of the rock seemed a lifetime away.
"Just keep thinking about those cliffs,"
muttered Boris, as if reading the young man's thoughts.
"When they tell you to fall back, you're going to haul your ass like you've never run before."
Although his accent was thick Russian, Boris spoke in American slang, as if he had learned it from Hollywood movies.
"And don't go shooting at everything that moves," he continued. "You go for the demon, and you call out your mark. We shoot together in pairs. That way we have more chance of bringing it down. You shoot off at everything and you're just going to piss them off."
Carpazzo stared at the big man in nervous incomprehension.
"What do you mean?" he croaked. "What the fuck do you mean, demons?"
He glanced back out across the plains. Dark shadows seemed to be forming over the red, cracked earth. Yet there was nothing visible to make them. The red mist rolled ever closer. He thought he could make out shapes moving within it. It was barely 200 meters from their positions.
"What the hell have they taught you?"
cursed Boris, dropping his gun on the trench wall once more and addressing the young American.
"What the fuck do you mean, demons?"
snapped Carpazzo again hysterically. He glanced back once more to the safety of the cliffs behind them. Boris let out a curse and held his hands up in despair.
"You've at least seen these creatures before, yes?"
he asked in frustration.
I ain't seen shit,"
coughed Dan, his hands trembling.
"They gave us a leaflet when we got posted here. It just said a bunch of horse shit about hallucinations. We just laughed it off. I didn't sign up for any of this crap."
"Well, you're here now, so tough shit," cut in Boris severely. "Now listen good. If you don't want to be worse than dead in the next 10 minutes, then do exactly as I say. The creatures that we call demons, we go for them, and we go for the same one to give us a chance of stopping it. You're going to see some of the weirdest shit you've ever seen in your life. That'll be all around them. That's the ghosts. Where there's demons, there's ghosts. Just ignore them. They can't harm you. Don't waste ammo on them or it'll all go fucked up. Follow my lead and go for the demons.
How do I know which is which?
Croaked Carpazzo in a terrified whisper. It sounded as if he were about to faint. Boris let out a hearty laugh.
Oh, you'll know, he chuckled. The demons look like your worst nightmare, and then some.
Oh, and if you get trapped. His voice lowered to a serious whisper.
Save one shot for yourself.
He turned back to the plane. The mist was barely 100 meters from their positions.
Get ready, he said in a leaden voice.
Dan crouched behind the lip of the trench, not daring to look over. Boris's words had carved fear right through him. His limbs shook in great spasms, and he felt the warm sensation as he uncontrollably urinated into the catheter system of his suit. Suddenly he felt a heavy hand upon his shoulder lifting him to his feet.
Get ready,
the giant of a man hissed again, and Dan once more went mechanically through his gun's diagnostics. Boris slapped him sharply on the side of his helmet and jerked his head angrily out towards the plane. Dan nodded hysterically and settled his shaking gun towards the bank of mist. There was a deathly silence all about the plane now, and Dan felt that he could sense the soldiers all over Palmer's Point, breath held in terrified anticipation. And then the mist rolled over them in lazy clouds, covering the plane like a shroud, letting in only a faint glow from the sun.
Listen,
whispered Boris. Dan strained to hear over the sound of his beating heart. Now they could all hear it, the slow crunch of heavy boots over rough rock. Boris shouldered his weapon and took aim as a row of figures melted out of the mist, trudging wearily towards them. Suddenly, one of the soldiers up amongst the rocks let out a great whoop of joy, and a wave of relief ran through the trenches.
Whoa, it's our boys,
came an American cheer.
It's the 42nd boys from the probing mission.
Carpazzo collapsed over his gun, sobbing in relief as he recognized the familiar suits of his comrades, approaching slowly out of the mist.
Get ready, hissed Boris in fury.
He still held his gun ready in anticipation.
It's not them, you fool, he cursed.
Dan grabbed his rifle, and then with one terrifying voice, the approaching figures let out a shrill, inhuman cry. Dan's blood froze, as he made up fatal wounds or missing limbs as the mist cleared a little to give him a better view. Hideous death grins leered at him from behind smashed visors, whilst others dragged their mutilated bodies over the hard earth.
What the hell's going on?
Screamed Carpazzo as a barrage of shots erupted from the trenches, as terrified soldiers realized that the dead approached.
Ignore them! Hold your fire!
Shouted Boris in fury.
Wait! They're just phantoms! The real army is almost upon us!
Okay, so what do we do? Asked one of the soldiers nervously. Stuart Nix held his hand up as he bent double, trying to get his breath back. After a few seconds, he shut his eyes and nodded, wiping the sweat from his face.
Well, he panted, this maintenance hatch leads down into the main venting system.
He struggled awkwardly with a large lever system. There was a hissing of gases, and the small hatchway set into the floor popped open. Using a screw wheel, Nick started winding the heavy cover open. He was exhausted from their mad chase up three flights of stairs from the floor of the array hall. Alarms still blared out in a cacophonous rhythm. But the entire maintenance section was deserted now. Everyone had fled to the upper levels as panic spread before the terrible creature.
Give us a hand, would you?
He gasped, and leant heavily against the wall as one of the soldiers took over. The hatch slowly opened like a sinister mouth, revealing a short iron ladder disappearing down into the blackness. Nix wiped the sweat once more from his face with the back of his hand.
Once we're in the main venting system, he continued. Well, then... I don't know. We need to stop that thing getting into the array tunnels proper. It's confined down here. If it gets into the conduit system, it could get to the surface anywhere, in an area of about a few hundred square miles.
The soldiers looked at him in confusion.
The array system's that big, he muttered. It's massive. We haven't got a hope of finding it if it gets loose.
Do we need to find it? Croaked one of the soldiers feverishly.
I mean, if it gets out, then the army can deal with it, right?
He was a young man, wide-eyed and panicked.
We are the army, you tosser, snapped another soldier, a balding man in his mid-40s.
He seemed as out of breath as Stuart Nix,
Yes, Sarge, but I'm talking about tanks and shit. Our rounds didn't even touch that thing. I emptied a whole clip into it and it did fuck all. Shut your fucking whining, Brown, and get down that fucking ladder, barked to the sergeant. Lovell, you're on point.
The third soldier, a blond-haired man, thin-built and athletic, nodded and knelt down by the hatchway. Clipping a torch to the barrel of his rifle, he ducked his head into the darkness, swinging the light around against the gloom.
Looks clear, he hissed, pulling his head back out of the hole and shooting Nix a wild grin.
The sergeant nodded urgently, and Lovell swung his legs over the side and slipped quietly down the ladder. Nix watched anxiously as the man disappeared into the darkness, the beam of his torch swinging wildly about on the man's rifle, slung over his shoulder. The sergeant was next, lowering his heavy bulk over the side and gingerly following Lovell into the shadows.
You next? Asked Nix nervously, leaning over the edge to peer down.
He could make out the lights from the two men still descending in the distance.
No, please, after you,
grinned Brown, the terror still written upon his face. Nix swallowed hard and crouched down, swinging his legs over the side of the forbidding opening. He shook violently as his numb feet found the rungs of the ladder, and he forced himself to clamber down into the horrible blackness. The ladder seemed to descend forever, and Nix could still see the faint torchlight of the two soldiers below him as they continued down. The deep throb of the array resonated in the open space, and above him he heard the clank of Brown's heavy boots following him. He craned his neck upwards, and just made out the dull square of light beyond Brown's silhouette, the safety of the open hatchway they were moving further away from. Nix's arms and legs ached with the exertion, and he didn't know how much longer he could hang on to the rungs with his sweating palms. A bestial scream cut through the darkness, and Nix froze in terror. He screwed his eyes tightly shut, clinging to the ladder until he felt his fingers would break. The roar of the monster was amplified in the metal space as the sound crashed off the rusty walls.
Shit, shit,
cursed Nix to himself, unable to comprehend why he wasn't running away from the danger.
Oi!
Came a fearful whisper from above him. Nix clenched the rungs even tighter as his whole body went through spasms of fear.
Get moving!
Came the voice again, urgent and panic-stricken.
I can't! Oh God, I can't!
Croaked Nix, his voice snatched away by the throb of the array all about him.
Get fucking going!
Hissed the hysterical voice again, and slowly, one hand at a time, Nix found the strength to begin his descent once more. He still had his eyes tightly shut when he felt hands grab him roughly and help him off the ladder. His feet splashed into icy water, and he opened his eyes to find himself staring into the harshly lit face of the old sergeant. Nix looked around. In the dim torchlight, he could make out small tunnels branching out from the vast iron gallery. Water trickled down the rusty walls, and a strong icy wind blew through him with a ghostly moan.
This way,
he muttered nervously upon getting his bearings. He led the soldiers off towards one of the smaller tunnels, about 5 feet in diameter. It looked like an old disused sewer, dark and ominous.
It's this way,
he stuttered again, and plunged into darkness.
Cease fire! Hold your fire!
Screamed Boris, but his words were lost under the barrage of shots unleashed by the Americans in their blind terror. He reached over and placed a restraining hand on Dan Capazzo's rifle.
Cease fire!
He shouted fiercely into the young man's face, and Capazzo went limp, looking around desperately for a means of escape. Shots and explosions erupted all over the plain as the panic-stricken troops poured fire onto their former comrades, but still the figures kept coming. Dan sobbed hysterically. Two dead soldiers were only yards away now, pushing on through a storm of gunfire. Their environment suits were torn and bloodied, but Dan could still make out the American flags on their arms. One of the figures limped forwards on a leg gouged to the bone, and Carpazzo shrieked to see a skull leering at him through a smashed visor. The other figure had an ugly wound in its chest. Its face was hidden by a swarm of black creatures which flew about inside its helmet.
Ignore them, came a calm voice from beside him.
Capazzo looked feverishly up towards Boris, who stood quietly, his gun ready, pointing out beyond the approaching ghosts.
What? Are you fucking nuts?
Screamed Capazzo.
They're fucking dead, for Christ's sake!
Away to his left, Capazzo saw another dead figure approaching his comrades further down the trench. They frantically loosed off shot after shot into its body, the suit ripped away,
exposing red flesh, but the figure struggled on towards them, arms stretched out before it. With a final burst of gunfire, the creature fell to the ground, melting into the red rock as its body liquefied. The soldiers nearby gave a cheer, looking around for another target. Carpazzo gave a grin of relief and turned to Boris.
"They did it!"
he shouted.
"They stopped one!"
He shouldered his own rifle, pointing it at the two figures approaching him. Boris snatched the gun from his hands and struck the young man on the side of his helmet.
"Wait!" he snapped. "Look and see what they have achieved."
Carpazzo glanced over to where the ghost had fallen. Its body had formed into a pool of viscous, tar-like fluid, which bubbled and seethed. The nearest American soldiers looked on cautiously as the small pool began to expand, moving slowly towards them. Shapes bubbled up in the liquid. Faces and limbs formed and then melted away. As the liquid neared the soldiers, one of them aimed his rifle and fired a shot into it. There was a blinding explosion, and Dan fell to the floor as a sheet of flame swept over him. He looked back to the soldiers who had fallen against the side of the trench, their suits blackened and scorched. He watched helplessly as they tried to get up, but they seemed held to the floor. They struggled in vain, and then Dan noticed that the tar-like fluid was all about them, seeping up through the rocks, sucking at their limbs as they tried to get up. He made a move to help them, but Boris held a firm, restraining hand on his shoulder. There was a deep, subterranean rumble as the earth around the trench shook. Small stones fell in from the walls, and Dan cried out as the very floor began to heave. He stepped out of the way just in time as a huge spike thrust out of the earth, shooting up above their heads. All about them, the charred, blasted remains of tree trunks pushed up through the hard ground, and in a second the entire landscape was altered. Dan looked about in terror, as the soldiers nearby cried out, impaled upon sharp branches where they lay, stuck in the black mud. One man dangled 20 feet in the air, a branch stuck through his shoulder. He screamed for a moment, then the blast from a gun hit him, and he lay still. Carpazzo looked around in amazement and dread, as Boris lowered his smoking gun.
"This is not good," cursed the big man, turning back to the mist.
Dan followed his gaze and screamed, flinging himself against the far wall of the trench. The two dead figures were upon them now, crawling over the sides of the dugout, their eyes fixed upon Carpazzo, their shattered lips moving in silent pleas.
"Boris!"
he screamed in panic, but the big man merely stepped aside as the figures approached. He looked back at Dan for a moment, then went back to studying the mist.
"Boris!"
he screamed again, curling up in a ball, his arms over his head.
"Help us. Please, help us,"
came a terrifying whisper close to his ear. Dan felt their hands running over his arms as they bent over him, the chill of their touch reaching through his suit. He screamed and yelled in absolute terror, twisting and writhing as the ghost poured at him.
"Hey!"
Dan desperately fought the hands as they held onto him, lifting him up. He struck out, but to no avail.
"Hey, calm down. They've gone."
Finally, realization hit Carpazzo and he opened his eyes. He was staring into the green goggles of Boris's face mask as the man shook him by the arms.
"They've gone,"
he yelled again, and this time Dan went limp, looking around frantically, still panting heavily. Most of the American soldiers had fled and were falling back through the dense trees of their newly formed pine forest, the ravaged bare stumps and trunks hampering their retreat. They shot wildly behind them as they ran, the dead soldiers still pursuing them. The woods spread out a few hundred meters from all around their positions, and Dan saw that only a handful of soldiers had held their ground and stayed in the trenches. Here and there were small groups of Americans that the more experienced of Vladich's men had managed to hold together. Suddenly a burst of static cut in through Dan's earpiece.
"All units, fall back to Sector 1, Palmer's Point. I repeat, regroup at Sector 1.
"This is it,"
muttered Boris, picking up Carpazzo's gun and thrusting it into the young man's shaking fingers.
"We're getting to higher ground," he said, setting off along the trench, picking his way amongst the blackened stumps. "There won't be enough of us," he muttered, half to himself.
Dan followed closely behind the big man, fearfully glancing over his shoulder as he went. Up ahead, a high spike of rock that was Palmer's Point rose out of the bare tree stumps. He could make out ragged groups of soldiers picking their way towards the higher ground, preparing to meet the next onslaught. Nix crept forward, barely daring to draw breath, anxiously following the faint beam of torchlight in the distance. The light halted abruptly,
and Nix dropped into a crouch, his arm pressed against the damp concrete wall of the low tunnel. His ankles ached from the icy water which ran down the floor and over his shoes, and he shook with a mixture of cold and terror.
"Which way?"
A hoarse whisper at his ear made him jump. He looked up into the gaunt features of the dour sergeant, and at the crazy shadows he cast upon the wall in the dim torchlight.
"Nix, the conduit system. Which way?"
Nix stared blankly into the sergeant's face for a second longer, then shook his head to regain his composure.
"Left. It's left at the intersection,"
he stuttered, his voice echoing in the stillness.
"We're nearly there." "Okay,"
whispered the sergeant, signalling up front to Lovell, who continued his cautious journey into the blackness. He helped Nix to his feet, and once again they followed Lovell's dancing torchlight through the maze of tunnels. They had been hunting the creature for some 20 minutes now. At first they had made straight for the maintenance hatch, through which the monster had been attempting to gain access to the tunnels. But they were too late. The door had been ripped open, and their view of the array chamber told them that the creature was long gone. So now they made for the entry tunnels, which led to the vast conduit system. If they could keep the creature confined in the venting tunnels which they now traversed, then Nix thought they may have a chance of stopping it. But the conduit system was the key. Miles and miles of tunnels with regular surface stations meant the creature could evade them and escape with ease. They had to get to the entry tunnels first. Nix stopped again, his nervous breath steaming in the chill air. Lovell was beckoning back to them. Slowly the three made their way to where Lovell knelt in the low tunnel.
"I think you should see this,"
he grunted to Nix, covering his nose and mouth in disgust. As Nix crept forward, the stench hit him. An overwhelming odour of rotting flesh emanated from a strange mound in the centre of the floor. Nix felt himself retch, and spat bile from his mouth as he approached the steaming mass.
"Is it dead?"
whispered Brown from behind them, his voice shaking with fear.
"No,"
coughed Nix in disgust.
"It looks like it's just skin."
He prodded the pile of flesh gingerly with his foot. He could make out the vague outline of claws and wings.
"I think it shed this, like a snake or something."
"Great," muttered the sergeant.
"So what the fuck does it look like now?"
"Well, these tunnels are getting smaller. Maybe it needed to reduce its size,"
whispered Nix distractedly, still staring in morbid fascination at the hideous pile.
"Well, come on," hissed the sergeant. "Lovell, back on point."
They crept onwards through the dark, the venting tunnels becoming steadily smaller, until they were almost bent double, splashing through the icy water which covered the floor. A chill wind now blew upon their faces with a soft, mournful moan. Nix came to a halt once again, his head cocked on one side. And then they could all hear it, a rhythmical thud like the sound of distant machinery.
"What's that noise?"
hissed the sergeant in Nix's ear.
"I don't know,"
he replied.
"But the entry chamber to the conduit system should be about 100 yards from us, just around that far corner."
The sergeant gave a deep sigh.
"You stay here,"
he muttered to Nix.
"If you don't hear from us in 5 minutes, well, then you're fucked."
He gave a grim laugh and motioned for Brown to follow him up to where Lovell was waiting. Nix looked on in panic.
"But wait,"
he stuttered.
"I haven't even got a torch. You can't leave me here." "Believe me, you've got the soft option. Anyway, you just get in the way. Wish us luck."
And then off they went, three dancing beams of torchlight receding into the distance. They paused for a moment, and then disappeared around the far corner, and Nix was engulfed by darkness. He could see nothing at all. It made no difference if his eyes were open or closed. All he could hear was the moan of the wind and his own ragged breathing. Even the distant thuds had ceased. He felt a rising surge of panic in his chest. He didn't know what to do. He daren't go back to be lost in the tunnels, and he was too afraid to go forward. He crouched, paralysed with fear, his hands up over his head. The echo of a gunshot split the silence and sent Nix sprawling back against the cold concrete in terror. He stayed where he'd fallen, his breath held as he strained to hear the next sound. The echoes died away to nothing, and Nix stared wide-eyed into the blackness, not daring to move. Then the tunnel erupted with the sound of gunfire, interspersed with desperate shouts and screams. Nix curled up in the icy water, sobbing to himself, covering his ears with his hands in a vain attempt to block out the chilling terror in those voices. There was a brief, final scream, then once again silence. Nix couldn't tell how long he lay in that cold blackness. But eventually something snapped inside, and before he knew it, he found himself stumbling drunkenly along the tunnel, following the same route the soldiers had taken. He found the turn in the corner with his numb fingers, and then in the distance made out a dim shaft of torchlight pointing up from the floor. The tunnel opened out into a large concrete chamber. An imposing steel door at the far end hung off its hinges, revealing the start of the conduit system beyond. Nix looked down wearily. The dead bodies of the sergeants, Lovell and Brown, were huddled together as if sleeping. The sergeant and Lovell seemed outwardly unharmed, but Brown's body had been stripped of its clothing, and a large ugly bruise could be seen on his swollen neck. Nix gingerly pulled the rifle from Lovell's limp fingers, awkwardly shining the torch fitted to its barrel about the room. With a shaking hand he pulled one end of the sergeant's coat over the dead man's face, covering his staring eyes. He crept through the open door and out into the conduit system. The tunnels were larger here and clean, rising high above him to be lost in the darkness. Dim red light lit the walls at regular intervals. With a mounting feeling of panic, Nix increased his pace, until he was running madly down the long, lofty halls. He came to the first inspection hatch and found it swinging open. He crashed through it and saw a long steel ladder. He forced his aching limbs up the endless steps until he was out, blinking in the unfamiliar light. He was standing in a small control room. A long workstation filled most of the space, and a large electronic map of the conduit system itself took up the entire length of one wall. Two men in engineer's overalls lay huddled together in the far corner of the room. Their dead eyes regarded him in terror. Sunlight streamed in through an open door, and Nix knew then that he was too late. A faint muffled sound of movement came from behind the workstation, and Nix spun around in a panic. He pointed the rifle inexpertly into the corner.
"Please, don't shoot!"
sobbed a voice in terror. A small man wearing the same overalls as the two dead engineers stumbled out from behind the desk, his hands raised above his head.
"Please, I'm unarmed,"
he sobbed again. Nix lowered the rifle a little.
"Where is it?"
he demanded.
"The thing that killed those two, where did it go?"
The engineer looked at Nix in panic and confusion, his arms still raised comically above his head.
"He just came through the hatch and killed them," stuttered the man. "He just killed them." "What do you mean, he?"
spat Nix.
"What was it?" "The soldier. He just burst through the inspection hatch. We were just running some tests on..." "You mean, it looked like a man?"
stuttered Nix in confusion.
"A soldier,"
gasped the engineer, the tears streaming down his cheeks.
"He just killed them. Went straight out the door. He took the keys to John's car."
Nix didn't listen as the engineer continued his story in a state of shock. He slumped to his knees, letting the rifle clatter heavily to the floor. It was gone, he thought in despair. And now it appeared human. It was too late.
"What's going on?"
screamed Grace, not daring to move as the nightmarish horde swirled and crashed around them. She flinched as a towering creature, almost 50 feet in height, brought down an enormous claw which smashed into the ground beside them. The monster resembled a spider of vast, impossible proportions, but its body was the shape of a man lying prone on its back, its 8 massive limbs cracked and bent, sprouting outwards. Its monstrous head lolled upside down on its shoulders, the features a parody of human melded with insect. A strange, cruel beak like the maw of an octopus occupied the central underside of the creature's belly. Grace looked up in terror as it passed over their heads in a haze of flame, smoke, and swirling red dust. With huge strides, the creature carried on, seemingly oblivious to their presence. The ground heaved and buckled with the passing of the horde, Grace and Thomas clinging to one another as the madness clashed all about them. As far as the eye could see, innumerable beasts poured past. Some were gargantuan, ponderous, composed of every conceivable variation of creature, whilst others were small, swift nightmares which darted between them, uttering shrill screams and wails. Every imaginable shape of madness was on the move. At the great spider creature's passing, Grace noticed dark, ugly wounds in the lush grass where it had stepped. But apart from that, it was as if the army inhabited an entirely different reality. Their bodies were semi-transparent and seemed insubstantial, passing harmlessly around and through them as they continued their blind charge towards the doorway and its defenders. It seemed to take an age for them to pass, but finally the shaking of the earth subsided, though the shrill cries and tormented screams still echoed across the plain. Grace looked up from where she had fallen, her arms still wrapped around Thomas in a terrified embrace. She struggled to her feet, helping Thomas up as she did so. He was pale and shaking behind his visor. They gazed about in horror. In a full circle around them, with the angel at its centre, was a ring of hideous beasts. They all seemed spawned from the same breed, massive, insect-like creatures covered in heavy plates of dark chitin, a mountain of cruel spikes and hooked barbs. They rested motionless upon their bony haunches, and although they too were ephemeral and translucent, their many alien eyes were all focused upon the angel.
"They can see us,"
whispered Grace fearfully, turning around slowly, gazing up at the terrifying creatures. The air shimmered on the edge of the circle, and three shapes began to form out of the air.
"Oh no, please, no,"
croaked Grace, her voice cracking in terror. The three figures seemingly pushed against an invisible barrier, trails of sparks erupting around them as they hauled themselves into the world. Two of the figures were monstrously familiar to Grace. She had listened to the sickening audio tapes of her friends and colleagues describing the creatures which now formed before her. Saul Davison's voice returned to her as he ranted and sobbed, speaking of the terrible humanoid form which had shifted under his gaze, with two great bat-like wings spread out behind it and a face of bestial ferocity. Now the two grotesque figures were completely revealed. Their skin shimmered and crackled as if fire played over it. They turned their gaze from the angel towards Grace and Thomas, who for an instant each felt their hearts stop beating. Grace slumped to the floor, still clinging desperately to Thomas, who shook uncontrollably at her side. But the two demons were as nothing compared to the central figure. Although she seemed outwardly human, the sickness which the naked girl exuded made Grace retch. With increasing panic, Grace recognized her from the array chamber, the being who had started their first exploration into the field all those months before. She had seen that face so many times on the video footage, and remembered the alien voice which had invited them into the field. But now they were truly before the entity. Her power and malice was too much to bear. Grace buried her face in the ground, crying out in madness. Somehow Thomas managed to remain standing. His body convulsed and he felt Grace pulling at his side, but he forced himself to continue watching the scene before him. The girl stood between her two lieutenants, appraising the angel with cold hatred. With a barely perceptible nod, her companions melted away to nothing, and she was alone. She gave a meek smile and walked cautiously towards the unmoving figure.
"Well, it is more than I could have imagined,"
she whispered. Her voice was totally alien in its inflection, but it rode on a wave of unmistakable malice.
"I should have expected to find you interfering in these degenerate affairs. As ever, your narrow vision betrays you and your kind. We're all the same kind."
The voice echoed from deep within the vast helmet of the angel. With a slow, painful effort, it straightened itself up to appraise the figure of the naked girl dwarfed before it.
"We parted ways long ago, my simple friend,"
hissed the girl. Thomas reeled from the venom of her voice, but he forced himself to continue watching.
"We're all fundamental to a single source,"
whispered the angel in sadness.
"And we shall all return to meet at that same point."
The girl's face twisted and contorted in fury and hatred. She seemed to grow in stature before the angel until they were of equal size, the heavy rusted mass of the angel's armour against the slender violence of the girl.
"The same source,"
spat the girl in rage.
"You encourage these creatures, these repulsive humans, even as you hide, terrified from them behind that ugly armor. For an eternity they have tortured us with their primitive minds, yet still you aid them in your own destruction. Well, come, brother, let us return you to that place, so you may rest in peace at last."
Claws flashed from the girl's fingertips, and a crackle of energy coruscated down her body as she poised to unleash her fury upon the angel. You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.